So, welcome back. It's time for our next talk. It's about a topic dear to my heart, replacing MD5 in all the places. Of course, it should have died a long time ago. And Matthew Almans is going to talk about how to do this with TCP-AM. So without much further ado, over to you.
All right, thank you. Yeah, so interesting that you say it's long due, right? The RFC is written a little over 10 years ago. So yes, it's definitely time. Good morning. My name is Melchior Almans. I'm a consulting engineer with Juniper Networks. A lot of my time I spend on routing security, RPKI, and other related topics. And obviously, TCP-AO is within that same game, you could say. So probably everyone is using or has been using MD5 to protect PGP sessions. MD5 is used in to protect other TCP-based protocols as well. But there are some, let's say, issues with it. It's deprecated for some time already. And there is a better alternative. So in this presentation, we'll look at the proposed alternative, TCP-AO. It has been discussed a lot in the past already at, I think, maybe every conference and meeting. There has been at least one presentation about TCP-AO, but the good news is it's finally there. Some vendors have implemented it, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So we'll look at the differences, implementation statuses, and some interop testing that has been done. So the first question is, why do we need TCP security at all? There are a few things we're trying to protect against. So we're trying to protect long-lived TCP sessions, and a long-lived TCP session is, for example, a BGP session or a LDP session, but it could also be, and that's then very close to my heart again, RPKI, RTR sessions, for example. There has been, there's defined in the RFC for RPKI, RTR that there should be transport security should be used. However, that wasn't implemented yet very widely, and there's a few options like SSH, TLS, MD5, but also TCP-AO is mentioned. We're trying to protect mainly against blind insertion attacks and replay attacks. Obviously, in an Intel Exchange environment, we're also trying to protect against hijacks. You can obviously perform a hijack by doing a blind insertion attack, or by accidental establishing of a BGP session. So quickly focusing on what is a blind insertion attack on a BGP session. Let's say we have two routers, router A and B, that have a BGP session that is, again, a long-lasting BGP session, so they exchange many routes over many hours. Now we haven't made friends with also being present a router C or node C. So he's trying to, let's say, take over the BGP session. And the way he's doing that is he's sending IP packets with a sourced, with a spoofed source address from router A. And in the TCP payload, he has the reset bit set. Obviously, destination port is BGP, so 179. And as he cannot guess the sequence number, he's just guessing that. So by nature, router B will obviously discard most of the packets because he will simply guess the sequence number in wrong. But at one point, if he gets it right, then obviously the TCP packet is accepted. And as the reset bit was set, the TCP session or the BGP session will reset. And then obviously router C could potentially initiate a BGP session with router B and so hijack the BGP session. So we have TCP MD5 to protect against that, right? That's what we are all using. So let's quickly look at how MD5 works. Basically, you configure a pre-shared key on both sides, and that pre-shared key is used to calculate the message authentication code for each TCP segment. You use MD5 for that calculation to hash it, and you include the MD5 signature option in the segment you send to the other side. On the other side, obviously, then you also calculate the MAC for the TCP segment you're receiving based on that pre-shared key. And if the calculation doesn't match up, then you simply discard the packet as the MAC obviously doesn't match. If it matches, you accept the TCP packet and you process the payload. All good, right? Until at one point your senior network administrator or someone in the networking department leaves and you want to change the pre-shared key. That is an issue, as if with MD5, if you change the pre-shared key, you obviously reset the TCP session. So you will have a service interruption. The other thing is that TCP MD5 doesn't support multiple authentication algorithms. And as MD5S authentication algorithm is deprecated, we preferably would want to use something else. So that is obviously an issue, and that's something that has been, again, recognized around 10 years ago when an operator asked my colleague Juan Bonica, hey, how can we solve this? So Juan Bonica wrote with a few others an RFC, and that specifies the TCP AO solution. And this is actually, I wanted to put this in, it's quite funny to see how often there was already discussions and presentations about TCP AO. Ignos has put a lot of effort into it. We'll get to what he's currently doing as well later in this presentation. And we started talking earlier this year. So we as Greg Hankins from Nokia, Ron Bonica, my colleague, and myself, about replacing MD5, because we're finally getting somewhere. So what is the TCP authentication option? The two things it tries to address when it replaces MD5 is that it does support key rollover without resetting the TCP session. And you can even configure multiple keys depending on the implementation. For example, in Juniper implementation, you can pre-configure 64 keys. And there's a method within the protocol that informs the other side to when the key rollover will take place or when to use the next key. And it supports multiple authentication algorithms. So those are the two most important differences. The concept is sort of the same, as in that we use master key tuples, which are, let's say, pre-configured keys on both sides. Again, in implementations, you can use pre-configure multiple keys, so you can schedule key rollover. The master key tuple is then used to derive the traffic keys. And a traffic key is used to generate the message authentication code, as we've seen, same as in MD5, for the TCP segment. So the MAC, you set the TCP authentication option in the TCP header. It contains the message authentication code, the key ID, and again, the received next key ID. So the other side knows that the next segment will use a different key. So how does the master key tuple look like? It is a TCP connection identifier using a source address, destination address, source port, and destination port. By the RFC, wildcards are allowed as well. Again, you set the in the TCP option flag, you set that you're using TCP AO. And as an identifier on the sending side, it's used to generate the key IDs on the outbound segment, and obviously receiving side is the other way around. You have an authentication algorithm. Again, the master key and a derivation algorithm. The traffic keys, there are four traffic keys, the send SYN, the receive SYN, send other, and receive other. And if you look at how that is then seen from the packet perspective, you set type 29, that is TCP AO. You set the length, key ID that's used for the current packet, and the R next key ID, that's the received next key ID for the next TCP segment. And as you can see, the MAC field is of variable length. In other words, that allows for a multiple or the use of different algorithms moving forward. So it's much more flexible in that sense than MD5. So if you pull it all together, each node is configured with, again, one or multiple master key tuples. Each node derives the four traffic keys, as we mentioned, from the master key tuple. Each node independently determines which MKT is active. And this is interesting because it's not specified which method to use there. What is currently implemented is that you define a start key and an end, start time and an end time for the master key tuple. But that could be different going forward, different options as well. And also how you distribute the keys, right? Some maybe a little bit out, but you could imagine, for example, the use of quantum key distribution here, right? So you use QKD to feed keys for TCP AO. It's a bit out, but it's an option. So then how does the flow work? The sending node calculates the MAC for the TCP segment with a chosen authentication algorithm. It uses the active key, and it includes a TCP AO in each segment, MD5 signature option. That should be obviously TCP AO signature option. So I found a mistake in my slides. the other way around, on the receiving side, obviously the receiving router calculates the MAC for the TCP segment it receives. It uses the configured algorithm and traffic key associated. And again, same as with MD5, if the MAC the calculated MAC does not match the receiving MAC, it obviously discards the packet. So from that point of view, it's very much like MD5 works. So this is actually the good news. We've been talking for TCP AO for, what I said, around 10 years. Finally, we've now seen implementations. There are currently three vendors that have released code that is available, are Nokia, Cisco, and Juniper. Some IOP testing has been done as well between Nokia and Juniper. And that worked actually quite well. I'll get to that in the next slides. Unfortunately, but maybe Florian, you want to comment, we haven't have a comment, a committed deadline from Arista yet, unfortunately, but it would be good, obviously, if other vendors join the effort as well. There's a GitHub page, github.com/TCP-AO. It's not that extensive yet, but it shows some details about the IOP test, and it shows some configuration examples. And we did a podcast with Ron Bonica and Greg Hankins who discuss the why and some of the history and where we are now. So you can check that out. One of the arguments we've heard is, why do we actually need TCP/IO while we have GTSM? Valid question. I think it's not one or the other. It's with probably every security measurement or security mechanism that one isn't one. But to quickly highlight the differences, GTSM, yes, it protects. So what it does, it basically sets the TTL to 255, and the receiving side only accepts the packets if it's the TTL is 254. So that works greatly on internet exchanges where there's a direct TCP connection. That doesn't protect you against attacks from attackers that are more than one hop away. And obviously it doesn't help you to protect IBGP sessions. So I think, again, it's not one mechanism, but it's a combination, and they make each other only stronger. So quickly focusing on the
We lost your audio. You're back. Good.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. Where did you lost me?
Just seconds ago you went and then you went silent. When you leaned back, you went silent.
Okay, right. Okay. So so again, Juniper and Nokia performed IOP testing. That was interesting because of COVID. We couldn't physically bring equipment together. So we tested using virtual appliances. So we spun up a VM on both sites in the labs, and we actually tested over the internet, which worked quite well. It worked actually very well. So it was an interesting in that perspective as well, that it's actually a lot of, for example, protocol stuff you can test just over the internet. So we, as you can see, we did that earlier this year. One of the things we've learned, this was actually a very, let's say, stupid one. We configured send ID and receive ID equal on both sides. And obviously that doesn't work. So make sure that if you start deploying this or testing this, that you switch the send and receive keys on one side. And the other thing that was interesting was on Juniper side, the box we the VM was running on was behind the firewall. And interestingly, the TCP MSS option was modified by the firewall. So we couldn't get the BGP session up and running. Only when we moved the VM to a box that was directly connected to the internet, we were able to get the BGP session up. And that immediately proved that TCP/IO was obviously working. So this was a very nice real life test. So what is next? As I mentioned, we're not there yet. Some of the code, for example, the Juniper code was released only a month ago. So that's fairly new, but I would like to invite people to start testing in their labs. If you don't have a lab, I have a lab running with a VMX and a XRV, and Greg can get you access to a virtual Nokia device, so you can play around in our lab if you're interested in doing that. And obviously start asking the other vendors about implementations. This only works, obviously, if more vendors implement and build the code. And there's exactly or directly a issue as the TCP/IO code isn't in the Linux and BSD kernels yet. So that is work. That is in progress. Ignos is working on with a group of people on doing some of the open source work. Rambonica is working with some students on getting that work done. And so that will hopefully come soon, because obviously then only we will see support in BERT, FRR, OpenBGPD, GoBGP, etc. And with that, I've come out to the end of my presentation. So if there are any questions, feel free to ask them now. Else, do reach out to myself or Greg Hankins from Nokia. Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming and speaking, and thank you for the presentation. So there are a few questions from the audience. One question is, why not use RFC 5082 instead, which is generalized TTL security mechanism?
Sorry, I'm not familiar with all the RFC numbers from top of my head.
general TTL security mechanism. The comment was, it's easier to use because you don't need password management. But like, this is a cold question, obviously. So if you don't have the context, I think it's...
I would need to look into that. Please do send me an email, and I'm happy to look into it and discuss. Because obviously, again, this isn't solving everything. And alternate security measurements next to others are absolutely welcome.
So next question was, if you can share more about why there is such a huge gap between RFC and implementation, what the underlying mechanisms are.
Sorry, if I can share about?
Just go in more depth why you have this huge gap in time between the initial RFC and the implementation. I mean, on the other hand, with IPv6, we kind of notice in the networking space, but the question was how much.
Excellent question. And it's something that I've actually asked, for example, Ron as well, as being one of the authors of the RFC. The thing is, a lot of the work in IETF that's being done is sometimes driven by one or a few customers. And obviously, then people try to address that issue by writing an RFC. But then the next step obviously is that product management and others within the networking vendors and who need to assign the resources have sometimes different priorities. So the way to drive features with any vendor is customer demand, right? So at one point you either need customer demand or you need to let's say convince the right people that it's something you need to start building. At this point, speaking for Juniper, one of the things was obviously that Cisco and Nokia were first by doing the code work. So they already released the code. And then obviously there is a competitive thing that you need to catch up. And there were multiple customers asking for us to do the work. Also with regards to, we haven't finished that yet, but that's work in progress, to do security for RPKI RTR. And so that is the interesting thing with TCP AO, that it solves multiple use cases. And it protects against TCP header attacks, where a question I get a lot as well is, why not use SSL or TLS? It does protect the payload, but it doesn't protect you against TCP header attacks. So that's the reason why I think we should be driving TCP AO. But yeah, again, it comes down to customer ask. So that's why I was saying at the call to action slide, ask your favorite networking vendor to do the work. That's how it works.
Yes. Yeah. The next question was around security properties of variable length fields. So how much concern do you have about having variable length fields within TCP AO?
Good question. I don't directly have an answer to that. I agree variable lengths could be a security issue on itself. No, but I don't have an answer to that yet. Again, please do send me it by email, and I'm happy to come back on that.
The next one was also more of a meta question. If you were aware of good key management solutions in the background, because obviously with key change and key management, it's nice if you can do this on the device, but about the backend, if you have anything to share.
Yeah, interesting. We've been, so Greg, Ron, myself and Ignaz have had lots of discussions about that. And we've been even been thinking, can we leverage, for example, something like PeeringDB? Because it doesn't really matter if you know one of the keys, it does matter when to use that key. Because there are 64 options for or 64 possible keys, right? So if you, it's the combination makes it hard. So we've been spending some time thinking about it. We haven't come up with an answer yet. But yeah, it would definitely be interesting. And that's also on the GitHub page, and draft for an or start for an applicability draft. Because the key management itself could definitely be something which could be worth writing an RFC or best common practice for. But no, I don't have an answer right now.
Okay. Yeah, it probably smells more like BCP. So sorry, I need to. Oh yeah, why do you need four different traffic keys?
Good question. The number of keys you derive from the master key tuple is what makes it hard to randomly guess the key, right? If it's just the MKT or the pre-shared key. Which you're using, which could be an option. That's sort of the first basic step, right? But if you sort of randomize the key based on source destination port and source destination IP, you make it much more difficult to randomly guess the key or brute force the key.
Okay. Next question was, what are use cases for TCP/AO outside of BGP?
Okay, yeah. So again, basically every long-lived TCP session. So that could be LDP, could be RPKI, RTR. But as soon as we see the code for Linux and BSD, you can basically you could basically secure every TCP session with it. Someone at one point called it even sort of a, let's say, very easy tunneling mechanism without needing IPsec or that kind of stuff to tunnel TCP traffic. Obviously, it's not tunneling, but yeah, you can basically think about every long-lived TCP session that could be applicable for TCP/AO. But the most obvious ones currently are, of course, those where MD5 currently is used. So LDP, BGP, and hopefully soon RPKI, RTR.
Yeah. Okay, I don't see any more questions in the chat. Maybe one information for the recording from the chat. There is talk about which kernel patches on Linux work. They're kind of stale and old. There is talk about potentially reviving this effort in the Linux kernel, but like this is just for persisting this in the actual video recording.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to work with people and get you in touch and with folks who are interested in doing some of the open source stuff, or write a Wireshark dissector, or help with let's say the tooling around it. So yeah, if there's people, folks interested, then please do reach out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't see any more questions in the chat, so I guess we're done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thanks again for having me.